Madam Chair, the attendees have filled in, and we're live. The floor is yours.
Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the State Lands Commission to order. All representatives of the commission are present. I'm State Controller Betty Yee. I'm joined today by Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kounoulakis and Gail Miller representing the Department of Finance.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum present. In addition, I would like to identify members of the staff of the commission participating virtually for this hybrid meeting. Our meeting liaison, Kim Lunetta, is participating by Zoom, and our Zoom co-hosts include Katie Robinson-Phillips. She'll be helping us with public comment, and Mike Farina and Phil Schlater will be working in the background to help make sure everything runs smoothly.
Great, terrific. Thank you, Ms. Lucchesi. For the benefit of those joining us in the audience and virtually, the State Lands Commission manages property interests in over 5 million acres of land, including mineral interests. The Commission also has responsibility for the prevention of oil spills at marine oil terminals and offshore oil platforms, and for preventing the introduction of marine invasive species into California's marine waters. Today, we will hear requests and presentations involving the lands and resources within the Commission's jurisdiction. We recognize the lands we manage have been inhabited for thousands of years by California's native people and take seriously our trust relationship with these sovereign governments. I want to take a moment to acknowledge and express gratitude to the Tongva people on whose lands this meeting is being held. Tongva have maintained a constant presence on the landscape, living on this coast and fishing in these waters for countless generations. The Commission takes seriously its trust relationship with these sovereign governments and recognize that California's native people are essential stewardship partners of this state's lands and resources. I also want to take a moment to honor the California Native American communities all across the state for persisting, carrying on diverse cultural and linguistic traditions, and sustainably managing the land that we now share. Native people have maintained a constant presence on the landscape for many thousands of years, and they are essential stewardship partners, whether along the coast, along our rivers and valleys, or in our fragile deserts. We thank California Native American communities for participating in this commission's activities and for their essential role in maintaining and adding to our state's rich cultural legacy. Next item of business will be public comment, I believe. Is that correct? Yes. Before I open the public comment period for items not on the agenda, first let me thank everyone, especially our stakeholders and members of the public, for taking the time to join our meeting. Now I want to turn it over to Ms. Lucchesi to quickly share some instructions about how we can best participate in this meeting so that it runs as smoothly as possible. Ms. Lucchesi?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Yee. It does look like all of our public commenters today are joining us virtually, so I wanted to take a moment to explain how that will work. So we will typically in these hybrid meetings, we'll take those members of the public that are here in person with us first and then move on to those participating virtually, but we will start with those virtually today. So for those joining us through the Zoom platform, if you would like to speak during our open public comment period or during a public comment period that is part of an agenda item, we do have an electronic request to speak form available on our homepage, and I'm very grateful for those who have already filled that out in advance of our meeting. We'll call you in the order that you submitted the electronic request to speak form. And for those participating virtually, make sure you have your microphones or phones muted to avoid any background noise. To help us call on you through Zoom, please raise your hand during the appropriate comment section in one of two ways. First, if you're attending on the Zoom platform, please raise your hand in Zoom. If you're new to Zoom, and joined our meeting through the Zoom application, click on the hand icon at the bottom of your screen. When you click on that hand, it will raise your hand. Second, if you're joining our meeting through your phone, you have to press *9 on your keypad to raise your hand to make a comment. If you're calling in and want to view the meeting, including the PowerPoint presentations, please view the meeting through the CalSPAN live webcast link. There will be a slight time delay, but it will avoid an echo or feedback using the Zoom application and your phone. We will call on individuals who have raised their hands in the order that they are raised using the name that they've registered with or the last three digits of their identifying phone number. After you are called on, you will be unmuted so that you can share your comments. Please also remember to unmute your computer or phone and identify yourself. You will have a time limit of 3 minutes to speak on an item. The commission has also established an email address to compile public comments for our meetings. Its address is cslc.commissionmeetings@slc.ca.gov. And we've received various emails from parties that have been shared with all the commissioners prior to the meeting today. If we receive any emails during the meeting, they will be shared with our commissioners and be made available on our website, along with the other public comment letters and emails we have already received. Chair Yee, that concludes my meeting instructions, and we are ready to move on to the public comment section.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Lucchesi. Our next order of business is the public comment period. If anyone wishes to address the commission on any matter not on today's agenda, I will call on those. You will have 3 minutes to provide your comments. So I will look to Katie to please identify the first person who would like to make a public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For our first public commenter, we have Francis E. Coates. I do not see him on the attendee list. So, Mr. Coates, if you could please raise your hand so that we can identify you, I will come back to you. Our next speaker after Mr. Coates is Rita O'Flynn. And again, I'm not able to identify Mrs. O'Flynn on the attendee list. So if you are tuning in, if you could please raise your hand so we can identify you, and we'll come back to you. So then we'll move on to Aline Boken. And you should be able to unmute yourself now.
Good afternoon, Aline. Can you hear us?
Aline Boken, Coalition for San Francisco Neighborhoods, speaking on my own behalf. Regarding the state tidelands in the Bay Delta region, off Ocean Beach in San Francisco. The southern area of Ocean Beach is experiencing increasing erosion, while the northern area is experiencing accretion or buildup. A study by the U.S. Geological Survey in Santa Cruz established a link between the erosion and accretion with sand mining in San Francisco Bay. New subject. One of three wastewater treatment facilities in San Francisco is in the coastal zone with related infrastructure in the tideland zone. It's referred to as the Oceanside Treatment Facility. It's located adjacent to the Parkside District and owned and operated by the SFPUC. A study by URS, commissioned by the city, identified the property, which is part of the Oceanside Treatment Facility, as a preferred location for a desalination plant. IDE Technologies, a company specializing in desal, has confirmed that a desal plant could be combined with the ocean water pump station for the city's emergency firefighting water system, or EFWS. EFWS was built in the aftermath of the 1906 earthquake as a high-pressure, high-volume firefighting system, which is independent of the city's drinking water system. However, EFWS is currently installed mainly in the east side of the city. West Side neighborhoods and merchants are advocating that the SFPUC expand dedicated EFWS to other parts of the city. Combining an EFWS pump station and a desal facility would enhance drinking water resiliency while also enhancing the city's response to catastrophic fires. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. Katie, our next speaker, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our next speaker is Jan Briscoe.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon, Ms. Briscoe. We can hear you. Please proceed.
Good afternoon. I'm Jan Briscoe. I'm the executive director with the Tahoe Lakefront Owners Association, and I'm commenting today on processing issues within the land use division and recent policies that have unfairly burdened applicants. As many of you know, that for decades, we have been working cooperatively with staff to streamline a very complex permitting process. And recent policies initiated by the State Lands Commission staff related to a certain type of applicant seeks to derail all of our progress over the years. We urge the commission to take a personal interest in these matters that appear to be headed in a very negative direction for applicants. The state land staff is selecting only those applicants and projects they deem worthy of review while forcing others to wait outside of the process until other regulatory agencies have taken action. This unwarranted precedent unfairly discriminates against certain classes of applicants, and we think it really does set a very dangerous precedent. So please help us keep our projects on track and ask staff to engage with us as primary stakeholders in order to resolve what would be unprecedented delays. We thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Briscoe, for your comments. Katie, our next speaker, please.
Yes, our next speaker is Connor Everts.
Good afternoon.
All right. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you, Mr. Everts.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. I'll try again. I want to ask your indulgence. I actually want to speak on an item on the agenda, but I'm not feeling well or I would be there in person. I was wondering if I could do it under public comment.
We'll give you 3 minutes to do that at this time.
Thank you, Chair. And to the commissioners, the item is Hollister Ranch. I am fortunate enough that I've been out there twice. Once, the friend of a friend who was at a ranch that took care of former thoroughbred racehorses. And I got it. The second time was to go out to Yvonne Chouinard's house, the founder of Patagonia, who I had worked for actually on the ocean desalination response many years before. And with Professor Wilkinson from UCSB, we took some students out and I asked to be dropped off at the kiosk and be able to ride my bicycle, which I did to the end. It was an amazing experience. Point Concepcion being the westernmost point on the California coast, the only place where I've seen the sunset and the so-called green splash, the open space and the history behind it. Everyone deserves access. You should not limit the access. As a kayaker, I considered the possibility of kayaking in, but it's just too rough and windy most of the time for that to be safe. So I hope we continue to move forward with that. And I also want to thank you for your dedication to the indigenous lands and the Tongva. I think that's the best version I've heard in any public meeting. And we will try to emulate it with the environmental coalitions I run. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Everts. Hope you feel better soon. Katie, our next speaker, please.
Our next speaker is Jeanette Vosberg.
Good morning, commissioners and observers. This is Jeanette Vosberg, and Grassroots Coalition President would usually be present, but she's faced with a dire emergency and she cannot be here today. So I said that I would make some remarks in her absence. On several occasions, she's directed your attention to recent discoveries that we did not know about over the past 30 years, as well as three ongoing life-threatening biota issues, which you, the State Lands Commission, have the authority to act on. One, gas leaks at University City Syndicate in the freshwater marsh that's managed by Playa Vista. Both LA City experts, Environmental Technologies, Inc., and Dr. Becker, an expert on oil fields, have spoken out subsequent to their original studies years ago on this, within the last year. Two, grassroots coalition requests that the State Lands Commission adhere to Fish and Game Code 1745, CCR Title 14, Section 630, terrestrial non-marine registered status of Biona Wetlands Ecological Reserve. This was done in 2005, shortly after the Biona Wetlands became an ecological reserve. And also, I'd like to direct your attention to the 2008 MOU that contains the State Lands Commission's switched goal document that incorrectly states Biona Wetlands is classified as estuarine. Now, the Coastal Conservancy et al. Definition is marine. Basically, they're the same. Or Fish and Code, Game Code 1745, CCR, Title 14, Section 632, marine, as opposed to Section 630, which was the designation it was given by the Fish and Game Commission. Director Lucchese assigned this request by Ms. McPherson to Ms. Calvo, a staff commission. We have not received any response from Ms. Calvo. Earlier, the Coastal Conservancy project matter manager provided SCWRP's inconsistent marching orders as an estuarine goal. Even the latest 2022 grant includes language, restore the ebb and flow of the ocean, which is inconsistent with the Biona status as a Title 14, 630 terrestrial non-marine. And three, the Coastal Conservancy has failed to speak out on Playa Vista and Fish and Wildlife dewatering of fresh water of Biona over the last 30 years, only after Grassroots Coalition won a lawsuit to stop throwaway of fresh water, the Coastal Commission ordered the capping of illegal drains. Other fresh water waste still exists. Four, the Boca Chica 2021 study lessons are also a stark warning against an industrial scale dig out at Biona. And five, last, sea level rise also endangers Biona's three freshwater aquifers. We've run out of time. Please treat this matter seriously for the benefit of the planet, the wildlife, the habitat, as well as us humans. We really need your help. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Fosberg, for your comments. Katie, our next speaker, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no other hands raised for public comment.
Thank you, Katie. That concludes our public comment period. Commissioners, we will move on to our next item of business, which will be the adoption of the minutes from the Commission's meeting of April 26, 2022. May I have a motion to approve the minutes? A motion by Commissioner Tulalakis, second by Commissioner Miller. Any objection to a unanimous vote? Hearing none, such will be the order. Thank you. Next order of business is the Executive Officer's Report. Ms. Lucchese, may we have that report?
Certainly. Thank you. Good afternoon. I want to update the Commission on a couple of matters relating to the Commission, the first being the 2022-2023 state budget. As you know, the legislature recently passed their version of the state budget, which includes several items specific to the commission. The first is a $2 million appropriation from the Environmental License Fund to operate and maintain and dredge the Boca Chica wetlands. The second is $500,000 to hire a consultant to conduct a risk assessment to determine the state's liability associated with the commission's lease premises and to establish criteria for and develop a framework for to support staff's efforts to calculate the appropriate levels of insurance and bonding for its leases. The third item is a $2.165 million one-time general fund appropriation to remove the deteriorated infrastructure at the Crockett Marina in along the Carquinez Strait. And the fourth item is a $1.625 million appropriation from the general fund and a $2.65 million reimbursement authority to accept cost-sharing contributions for the Selby slag remediation also in the Carquinez Strait. And the fifth item is a reappropriation of the $12 million that the commission received last year to remove abandoned and derelict vessels in the Delta. And this reappropriation extends our ability to encumber and expend those funds until 2025. So all of those items were also included in the governor's budget. The new element in what the legislature passed recently was that it also includes $1 million appropriation to the commission to develop a study to assess the cost of buying out the state's interest in its remaining offshore oil and gas leases consistent with AB 2257 by Borner Horvath, sponsored by the controller and supported by the State Lands Commission. The commission also worked with the Energy Commission and the administration to request a $1.2 million appropriation for technical assistance to support a study of ports and other waterfront facilities as required by AB 525. That was authored by Assemblymember Chu and sponsored by the Lieutenant Governor. AB 525 is intended to develop a strategic framework to facilitate offshore wind development in federal waters. We do expect that the AB 525 funding to be part of a climate and energy package that the legislature and administration are currently negotiating. Speaking of offshore wind, we are very, very busy throughout our entire staff working on various elements to facilitate offshore wind development in California. First, as you know, we have two applications for demonstration projects offshore Vandenberg Space Force. And last year, the commission authorized staff to pursue the environmental assessment under CEQA for both of those projects. We had originally envisioned that both those applications would be evaluated under one EIR, but the two applicants are at different stages of developing their project description and really nailing down those details. So we are going to be moving forward with a separate EIR for each of those applications. We are looking forward to sending out the notice of preparation for the CalDemo application and hopefully followed by the IDEAL application when they are able to finalize their project details. We are also working very closely with our agency partners, both local, state, and federal, on the offshore federal offshore wind efforts. So in June, the BOEM California Task Force held their fifth meeting and provided an overview of the proposed sale notice that was published on May 31st, 2022. And essentially, BOEM is proposing to hold a simultaneous lease auction for five lease areas within the Humboldt and Morro Bay wind energy areas. The Humboldt area will be divided into two lease areas, while the Morro Bay will be divided, lease area will be divided into three lease areas. Each lease would allow lessees to perform geophysical, geotechnical, and biological surveys, as well as temporary placement of up to three buoys and oceanographic devices. I'm having a very hard time pronouncing that. BOEM is accepting public comments on this proposed sale notice through August 1st, and then a final sale notice will be released. At their June meeting, the Coastal Commission did conditionally concur that BOEM's proposed leased activities outlined within the environmental assessment for the Morro Bay wind energy areas are consistent with the coastal management program under the Coastal Act. So this conditional concurrence follows a similar action the Coastal Commission took in April for the Humboldt areas. And then on the AB 525 side of things, in addition to the funding aspect of those efforts, the Energy Commission recently published a draft report that outlines the maximum feasible capacity of offshore wind, which will establish megawatt offshore wind planning goals for 2030 and 2045. And given the range of comments during that public workshop on the draft, the Energy Commission decided to revisit its initial planning goals and will hold a follow-up workshop on Monday, June 27th, to discuss the proposed revisions and take additional public comment. We're working with very closely with the Energy Commission and BOEM to assess the California seaport readiness and determine necessary physical investments to facilitate offshore wind development. As you know, the Energy Commission is the lead for AB 525, and they have created four technical working groups for transmission infrastructure, environmental and sea space analysis, port infrastructure and workforce development, and tribal and cultural resources. While we are a part of all of those working groups in monitoring their progress, our specific focus will be on the port infrastructure. And on June 1st, we solicited bids for our alternative port study that the commission authorized us to pursue. We are working with the winning bidder to host a kickoff meeting in the near future on that effort. And we continue to work with our state agency and federal agency partners on continuing outreach on all the affected stakeholders interested parties relating to offshore wind in California. Next, I did want to give an update on the Poseidon Huntington Beach desalination project as it relates to the State Lands Commission. As you know, on May 12th, the Coastal Commission denied Poseidon's coastal development permit application for the proposed desalination project. At the direction of Poseidon's board, Poseidon has begun the process of shutting down planning and other work related to the proposed project, and that includes working with our staff to determine next steps as it relates to the lease that they have with us. When those next steps become final and we agree on what those next steps are, I will update the commission on those the next action items relating to that particular lease. Finally, I want to give an update on our various decommissioning efforts in the Santa Barbara Channel. So first, with Platform Holly, we are continuing to maintain and monitor Platform Holly and the onshore facilities to ensure public health and safety. We are we continue to make good progress on the plugging and abandonment of the 30 wells. Four of the 30 wells have had their surface plugs installed and are now permanently sealed. We are proceeding in a phased approach with 16 of the remaining 26 wells and have had the lower oil producing formation sealed off. And we estimate the remaining work will be completed by the end of this year, which would be a huge accomplishment. We are also working on bringing either at our August meeting or October meeting, a request that the commission authorize staff to hire a consultant to then start the preparation of an environmental impact report for the ultimate decommission and disposition of Platform Holly, which is a significant milestone as we move into phase three of this decommissioning project after we finish plugging and abandoning the wells. In April, as you know, the commission certified the environmental impact report for the 421 piers removal project. We are in the process of working with Exxon to select a contractor to perform the work and actual decommissioning work, removal of those piers and those caissons is scheduled to begin in August of this year, excuse me. We are working with the Coastal Commission staff to get on their July agenda so that we can obtain a coastal development permit for this work. If we are successful at that, we will be able to start the project in August. Removing these piers, as we talked about in the last meeting, is a significant milestone, not just for the Santa Barbara Channel and the communities there, but just as symbolically as we transition away from offshore oil and gas and to renewable energy facilities. A quick update on our Rincon decommissioning project. As you know, we have finished all the plugging and abandonment of those 75 wells. So we are in that phase three element of the decommissioning process. We conducted a feasibility study of the ultimate disposition of the island, the causeway, and the onshore facilities. Essentially, that feasibility study talks about full removal, reuse, and then reefing, which would include the removal of the causeway, but keeping the island for reefing purposes. That feasibility study, which also includes costs associated with the engineering and technical feasibility of those three broad categories, was out for a 60-day public review period. We also held a public comment meeting on May 4th, and we are finalizing our review of the public comments and finalizing the responses to those comments, hopefully in time so that we can bring that feasibility study to the commission at your August meeting to get direction from you on a specific proposed project that will then help us kick off the CEQA process. So more to come on that. Again, significant progress is being made on that decommissioning effort. I also want to mention that yesterday, me along with Jennifer Maddox, our tribal liaison, and Jessica Ramirez, our environmental justice liaison, and Nicole Dabrowski, our chief of our environmental planning and management division, were fortunate enough. Oh, we also had Michael, our Sea Grant fellow, join us. We're honored and fortunate enough to go as guests of the coastal band of the Chumash Nation and Chairwoman Mia Lopez to visit the Wishitoyo Chumash Village in Malibu. This is a very unique and authentic recreation of a working Native American village on about a 4-acre historical site at Nicholas Canyon County Beach in Malibu. It's on a bluff overlooking the Pacific Ocean. It's the only living Chumash cultural village of its kind in Southern California, and its goal is to really raise awareness of the Chumash people's historical relationship and dependence on the natural environment as maritime people. And that was an incredibly special trip for us as staff, but also they were looking to show us their ideas that they have for Rincon Island and the onshore facility, and really working in partnership with the State Lands Commission to see their vision realized up in the Santa Barbara County area and the original homeland of the coastal band. It was a really moving day, really special experience, and I wanted to just emphasize the mutual feelings of partnerships of what the future of Rincon Island and the onshore facilities could be in terms of bringing everyone together and really looking at how we can recover from the decades of oil production at those sites. And finally, I also wanted to recognize and thank the City of Long Beach and California Resources Corporation for hosting the Lieutenant Governor and her team and our staff on a tour of Island White, one of the four offshore oil production islands, this morning. It was a wonderful tour. It was wonderful to meet many of the staff working on those islands, doing great work protecting the environment and ensuring all the operations out there are safe. And with that, that concludes my executive officer's report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. McKenzie. Any questions or comments, commissioners? Commissioner Gonzalez.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I was just thinking at the beginning of your presentation when you talked about the budget request for state lands and some of the allocations, that it has been an extraordinary budget year, another extraordinary budget year with this budget surplus. So thank you to you and your team for making sure that we're making requests. And I also really just want to recognize the work of Commissioner Miller, who has...
Even though the light's on.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. Okay. It just, yeah.
Let's try that. Can you turn it down?
We are in the most. We got no signal.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner Miller, for all of your hard work in managing this extraordinary process and for making sure that the State Lands Commission is able to take it to benefit from some of that surplus. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Kunalakis. Commissioner Miller, any comments? Great, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Lucchesi, for the report. I also wanted to just thank the City of Long Beach for hosting us today and our commission proceedings this afternoon. And was very happy to hear about the progress on the offshore wind projects and processes with the Energy Commission and with the BOEM process as well. And particularly about certainly this commission's commitment to being sure that there is still robust outreach and stakeholder engagement. So very much appreciate that not falling by the wayside as we really accelerate our focus on offshore wind. With that, let me see if there are any, Katie, any members of the public on this item?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no hands raised for public comment on this item.
Okay, very well. Thank you very much. Thank you. Then let's move on to our next order of business, which will be the adoption of the consent calendar. Let me look to Commissioner Kunalakis, Commissioner Miller, any items that you would like to see removed from the consent calendar?
I'll move approval, Madam Chair.
Let me turn to Ms. Lucchesi to see if there are any items for removal.
We are removing consent items 1 and 42 from the agenda. Those will be considered at a later date. No other items will be moved to the regular.
Okay, very well, thank you. And then with that, we have a motion by Commissioner Miller to approve the remainder of the consent calendar, seconded by Commissioner Kunalakis. Let me turn to Katie to see if there's anyone who wishes to speak on any item remaining on the consent calendar. If there are members of the public who wish to address the commission at this time, please raise your Zoom hand or dial 9 if joining by phone now.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have one hand raised for public comment. We have Jeanette Vosberg.
Okay. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. This is Jeanette Vosberg, and I am speaking again on the subject of Biona. I'm speaking on, I appreciate you taking me again. I am the outreach coordinator for Grassroots Coalition, speaking in the absence of Patricia, our president, who's unable to attend due to an emergency. The Playa Vista Biona Wetlands Conservancy and the State Lands Commission's allowance for their continued control have been part of an unpermitted and environmentally destructive road building in the riparian corridor. And I just want to bring your attention to that. Grassroots Coalition still awaits a response to our concerns regarding the control of Biona issues by the Playa Vista Development's private business known as Biona Wetlands Conservancy, to which the State Lands Commission acknowledges that it's not a board member. However, SLC continues to state that CDFW, CD11, and Friends of Biona are Biona Wetlands Conservancy.
Excuse me, Ms. Vosberg, I'm taking testimony on items on the consent calendar. Are you addressing a specific item on the consent calendar?
I'm not really.
Okay.
Another place where I could speak to
we,
this?
We can return to you at the end of our meeting.
That would be, do you have any idea when that would be?
I don't think it will be too long, probably within the hour and a half, maybe.
Okay, and I could speak then. That'd be great. I will come back to you.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Thank you. Katie, any other speakers in the queue for the consent calendar?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no other hands raised to provide public comment.
Okay, very well. Thank you. So seeing none, we will now proceed with the vote. We have a motion by Commissioner Miller, seconded by Commissioner Kunalakis. Any objection to a unanimous vote? Seeing none, such will be the order. Thank you. Let's see. Our next order of business will be the regular calendar, and we will move on to item 45. And this relates to discussion and possible action on state legislation relating to the State Lands Commission. And we have a presentation by Ms. Pemberton.
That's right. She'll be joining us virtually okay. for this presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioners. Good afternoon. I just wanted to start with an update about a bill the Commission supported last year, SB 796 by Senator Bradford, which enabled Los Angeles County to return coastal land in Manhattan Beach to the descendants of the Bruce family. The county released a report yesterday explaining how it will transfer the land back to the Bruce family descendants. The report is the culmination of months spent hammering out all the details, and LA County is slated to approve the plan next Tuesday. This is the first instance of a local government returning property to remedy a past racial discrimination committed by a local government in California. And it's just enormously significant. And given the commission's support of the bill last year, I wanted to include this update before turning to the broader legislative update. Okay. There are about 2 months left in the 2022 legislative session, with one of those being summer recess, so really about 1 month of in-session work. And as Jennifer mentioned in her executive officer's report, the legislature sent the governor a budget, though it hasn't been signed yet. And there are many more bills yet to pass in connection with the budget, including budget bill juniors, of which we're hearing there could be many. And then, as Jennifer mentioned as well, of particular interest to the commission is the $21 billion climate energy package that's currently being negotiated. And we're paying particularly close attention to the offshore wind energy language in that package, among other things. While the governor hasn't signed the budget yet, he did veto his first two bills of the session earlier this week. The commission is supporting four bills, all of which are progressing. AB 1832, a bill that would ban seabed mining, is in the Senate Appropriations Committee with a consent recommendation, having passed the Senate Natural Resources and Water Committee unanimously with bipartisan support. AB 353, the Long Beach Oil Trust Fund bill, is in the Senate Appropriations Committee on the suspense file, and commission staff will be reaching out to the chair, Senator Portantino, to set up a meeting before the suspense deadline to advocate for the bill. AB 2109 by Assemblymember Bennett, a bill that would ban the use of chum or bait to attract great white sharks, is also in the Senate Appropriations Committee, having received unanimous bipartisan support in the Senate Natural Resources and Water Committee. AB 1832 and AB 2109 are likely to bypass suspense and move to the floor and the governor quickly. The last bill the commission is supporting is AB 2257 by Assemblymember Borner Horvath. This bill would require the commission to develop a cost study to determine the cost of the state buying out the remaining interest in the offshore oil and gas leases. It does not include the oil and gas operations in offshore Long Beach. The recently passed budget allocates $1 million to the commission for the cost study. And the Senate Natural Resources and Water Committee will hear AB 2257 next Tuesday, and from there it will go to the Senate Appropriations Committee and then hopefully onward to the floor for a vote. I wanted to highlight two other bills that would impact the commission. These are bills that the commission doesn't have a position on. The first is SB 1065 by Senator Eggman. This bill, sponsored by the County of Sacramento, would create an abandoned commercial vessel removal program within the California Natural Resources Agency and require the State Lands Commission to administer the program. The bill would establish a multi-agency coordinating council to provide policy guidance for the program. It would also ban commercial vessels at risk of becoming derelict from occupying state waters, authorize peace officers to remove or seize these vessels, and authorize a civil penalty. This is a very significant bill, and if successful, would create an entirely new program that the commission would administer to compel coordination among federal, state, and local agencies to identify, prioritize, and fund the removal of abandoned and derelict commercial vessels from state waters. And as part of that, the commission would be required to create an inventory of all abandoned and derelict commercial vessels throughout the state. The budget approved by the legislature on June 13th doesn't include any funding for this program, though last year's budget did include $12 million for the commission to remove abandoned vessels from the Delta region. SB 1065 also creates a trust fund, which the commission would administer, that's comprised of any fine revenue that may be collected. Staff is working closely with the sponsor and other agencies on the bill, and thus far the bill has passed through legislative committees with unanimous bipartisan support. It recently passed the Assembly Natural Resources Committee on a 10-0 vote and is pending in the Senate Judiciary Committee. So I just wanted to highlight this bill because it's pretty significant, and if it passes, we'll give the commission a big role in implementing this new program. The second bill I wanted to highlight is AB 2607 by Assemblymember Ting. This bill, sponsored by the City of San Francisco, would facilitate a new regional firefighter training facility that would replace an existing facility that will become unavailable soon. The bill authorizes the commission to convey certain land to the city if it makes findings at a public meeting. Commission staff has worked with the City of San Francisco on this legislation over the past year and has no concerns about the bill. The bill passed the Senate Natural Resources and Water Committee unanimously and is pending in the Senate Appropriations Committee. The bill was not amended in the Senate, and it hopefully will be on the governor's desk soon. I also wanted to briefly highlight several bills that include the commission in a consulting role. First, there's AB 2593 by Assemblymember Borner Horvath that relates to the carbon sequestration potential of coastal wetlands and seagrasses, known as blue carbon sequestration. This bill would authorize the Coastal Commission to approve blue carbon sequestration demonstration projects, which would be intended to inform California's natural and working lands and climate resilience strategies. The bill requires the Coastal Commission to consult with the State Lands Commission to develop the blue carbon demonstration program. There's also SB 1078 by Senator Allen that would establish a sea level rise revolving loan program to provide local jurisdictions with low interest loans to purchase vulnerable coastal properties in communities disproportionately impacted by climate change. The bill would require the Ocean Protection Council to establish criteria and guidelines to identify eligible properties and require the council to consult with the State Lands Commission to develop those criteria and guidelines. And lastly, there's AB 1399 by Senator Wachowski, which would create a carbon capture technology demonstration project grant program intended to deploy and commercialize carbon capture technologies. The bill would require the Energy Commission, when it creates the program, to coordinate with the State Lands Commission. All of these bills are moving along and in their second house, and whether or not they move off of suspense will be decided in mid-August. And speaking of August, the Commission's August 23rd Commission meeting is the last time the Commission can take a position on legislation introduced this session. So if the Commission wanted to direct staff to bring any of these bills or others back for a position, we would certainly do that at the August meeting. The last few weeks of the legislative session are fast approaching and will be interesting as always. Staff will be following the ongoing budget negotiations carefully and will continue working on the bills mentioned above and others, as well as keeping an eye out for end of session gut and amends. And we'll update the commission again at the August 23rd meeting. Thank you, and that concludes my presentation.
Great, thank you very much, Ms. Pemberton. Questions or comments, commissioners? Great, thank you so much for the report. Let me see if there are any public comments on this item. Katie?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no hands raised for public comment on this item.
Thank you, Katie. All right, let's then proceed to item 46, and this is a presentation by the California Coastal Commission on its draft public guiding principles and action plan. We have Aubrey Yost with the Coastal Commission, who's joining us virtually for the presentation.
Good afternoon. My name is Aubrey Yost. Oh, excuse me.
Good afternoon.
I have a presentation, and I'm going to share my screen to, let's see. Oh, there it is. Great. Thank you very much. Good afternoon. My name is Aubrey Yost, and I'm in the Statewide Planning Unit at the California Coastal Commission. This item is an informational briefing to introduce the California Coastal Commission's new draft guidance document, the Draft Public Trust Guiding Principles and Action Plan, which was presented to the Coastal Commission and released for public comment on June 9th. This document is the product of a five-year NOAA Federal 309 grant strategy intended to develop management options to protect public trust lands and resources in the face of sea level rise in coordination with staff from the State Lands Commission. In 2019, The State Lands Commission's executive officer and the Coastal Commission's executive director signed a joint memorandum of understanding on behalf of their agencies, recognizing the need for coordination on a variety of issues, including on understanding the expected impacts of sea level rise upon public trust resources and to ensure protection and restoration of and mitigation for impacts on those resources. This interagency coordination on public trust issues and on the draft public trust guiding principles and action plan in particular has been very positive and productive. Coastal Commission staff have look forward to continuing to coordinate on these issues in the future. The Coastal Commission's draft public trust guiding principles and action plan is available on the public trust page of the Coastal Commission's website and describes how the public trust doctrine relates to the Coastal Commission's work on sea level rise planning. The guiding principles in this draft document provide a set of principles to guide the Coastal Commission in its sea level rise planning work, and the action plan sets forth a suite of potential next steps and research priorities for the Coastal Commission for its work at the interface of the public trust doctrine and sea level rise planning. After the public comment period closes, the public trust guiding principles and action plan will be revised to address comments and then will be brought back to the Coastal Commission for review and adoption. Next slide, please. Under the public trust doctrine, the state's tidelands, submerged lands, and navigable lakes, rivers, and streams are held in trust by the state for the benefit of the public. On the coast, the public trust is generally located on current tidelands, lands covered and uncovered by the ebb and flow of the tides. It also generally includes submerged lands and lands that were historically tidelands at the time California became a state in 1850, but have since been artificially drained or filled. Coastal public trust lands support a variety of ecological, recreational, socioeconomic, and cultural values. Public trust beaches and wetlands provide public access and allow for coastal recreational activities like surfing, sunbathing, bird watching, and fishing. Coastal wetlands support biodiversity, perform a variety of important ecosystem services, and support commercial and recreational fisheries offshore. Unlike much upland coastal property, tidelands are often open to all visitors at no or low cost, and are thus a critical resource to provide equitable coastal access. Public trust tidelands are also significant areas for coastal affiliated tribes and tribal resources and practices. Next slide, please. In the past century, the average global temperature has increased by about 0.8 degrees Celsius, and global sea levels have increased by 7 to 8 inches. In addition, sea level rise has been accelerating in recent decades, with the rate tripling since 1971. Sea level rise is presenting unprecedented challenges for the California coast, which will only increase as sea level rise accelerates in the future. Sea level rise will cause new areas of the shoreline to be regularly inundated by tides, increased erosion of the shoreline, increased storm flooding, rising groundwater tables, and saltwater intrusion into coastal aquifers. These hazards will place both coastal development and coastal resources, including public trust resources, at risk. Without careful planning and adaptation, public trust uses, such as coastal access, are likely to be negatively impacted by inundation and other coastal hazards up and down the coast, and may ultimately be entirely lost in some areas. Next slide, please. As mentioned, the Coastal Commission draft Public Trust Guiding Principles and Action Plan was developed in coordination with staff from the California State Lands Commission as part of a joint, federally funded, long-term public trust and sea level rise coordination project. As you know, the State Lands Commission has exclusive jurisdiction to lease and manage most public trust lands, and it must ensure that any such leases are consistent with, or at least do not significantly impair, public trust resources, uses, and needs. The State Lands Commission staff have expressed support for the draft guiding principles and action steps, and recognize the ongoing role of the State Lands Commission that the State Lands Commission will have in implementing several steps as part of ongoing coordination, subject to funding and staff resources. Next slide. This project follows presentation of the Protecting Public Trust Shoreline Resources in the Face of Sea Level Rise report to the Coastal Commission in November 2021 by Dr. Charles Lester, Director of the Ocean and Coastal Policy Center at the Marine Science Institute of University of California, Santa Barbara. That report discusses public trust issues relating to Coastal Commission planning and regulation of development on the immediate shoreline and adjacent uplands. It also includes a variety of legal, policy, management, and technical recommendations to address public trust tidelands and sea level rise based on tideland science and the public trust doctrine. The draft Public Trust Guiding Principles and Action Plan builds on many of these recommendations. Next slide, please. The 10 principles included in the draft Public Trust Guiding Principles are intended to assist the Coastal Commission, local governments, and members of the public in determining how to carry out the Coastal Act and address sea level rise in a manner that is consistent with the public trust doctrine. The Coastal Act itself is an exercise of the legislature's public trust authority and responsibility, and as such, aligns with and implements aspects of the common law public trust doctrine, including through its emphasis on public access, ocean-related recreation, and coastal-dependent uses like ports and fishing. The draft principles range from findings related to the impact of sea level rise on the public trust to Coastal Commission commitments to consider public trust resources in decision-making. Some of these draft principles include that the climate crisis and sea level rise are moving the public trust landward. Development decisions and sea level rise will impact public trust lands, uses, and resources. The Coastal Commission will identify anticipated impacts to current and future public tidelands, and that the implementation of the public trust doctrine through Coastal Commission actions can advance environmental justice. Next slide, please. The draft also presents a series of next steps and research and policy questions relating to sea level rise and the public trust that the Coastal Commission would prioritize over the next 5 years as staff resources and funding allow. These action steps build on the recommendations from Dr. Lester's report and our staff's work with State Lands Commission staff over the past several years. The action steps range from interagency and tribal coordination to public outreach, engagement, and public education on the purpose and role of the public trust doctrine and the management of California's lands and natural resources. Other action steps relate to Coastal Commission decisions relevant to the public trust, such as a step to identify development and decisions that result in coastal squeeze, leading to the loss of public trust resources, and an action step to consider updates to Coastal Commission regulations relating to mitigation of the adverse effects of sea level rise on public trust lands. More discussion of each of these guiding principles and next steps is included in the draft document. Next slide. The draft Public Trust Guiding Principles and Action Plan is currently only a draft. Before bringing the final document back to the Coastal Commission for review and adoption, Coastal Commission staff will seek input from coastal-affiliated California Native American tribes and state and local government agencies, as well as public comment on the draft. The draft is now available for public comment. A link to the document can be found on the public trust section of the Coastal Commission's website. Members of the public, commissioners, and others interested are encouraged to provide comments via email to statewideplanning@coastal.ca.gov by July 24th, 2022. That concludes the presentation for this item. Thank you, commissioners, for your time.
Thank you very much for the presentation, Aubrey, and I really appreciate the collaboration and the coordination with between the two commissions. Questions or comments, commissioners?
Well, I actually, first, let me thank you, Aubrey, for that really comprehensive presentation. And let me thank the audio guys for fixing whatever that was.
We're not done yet.
It's working, I think, for the moment. But thank you for that presentation. It was really pretty clear. There was one question I had when you talk about the way that the location of public trust lands could be impacted by where the tide banks are. So I can
imagine that if there were an area where part of the ocean receded, which I think is obviously less likely, that there could be more lands, or they would move seaward. But the main thing I think you were talking about is if the ocean is moving landward. So what can we anticipate relative to lands that are currently under the jurisdiction of others, whether it's a private entity or a tribe or a city or a county? Are we defining public trust lands as land that is submerged or not submerged based on the tides? And so if the location of the tides changes, then that automatically gives jurisdiction to this body or the Coastal Commission. I'm just really kind of interested in exactly what that is likely to mean to decision makers in the future.
Yes, that is a really excellent question. So as we all are usually familiar with property boundaries, like owning our home or a piece of property, it's usually bound four corners, right? And the meets and bounds descriptions, the legal descriptions of that property are very clear, and you can go out and survey it and you know exactly where the land that you own is located. Land or property boundaries along the coast aren't fixed, and that's pursuant to a statutory law and then case law that's been interpreted over time by the California court system all the way up to the California Supreme Court and the United States Supreme Court. So along the best way to describe this is on a sandy beach that has been unaltered by human activity. And if we're thinking about, let's say, Malibu, with homes that are right on the beach, their property description will likely call to the mean high tide line. That's their seaward boundary line of their property description. The California law determines that has stated that the boundary of public trust tidelands, the tidelands that the state owns, and then private uplands, is the ordinary high water mark. The California Supreme Court has interpreted that to mean the mean high tide line. And so that's how we measure what that boundary is. And what that means practically is that that boundary is constantly moving. It is not fixed. And so as sea level rises, then the boundary of the state's tidelands ownership interest moves landward. But similarly, if there's accretion, natural accretion, the boundary of the upland property owner moves with that accretion. And this has been well established in case law through various different court decisions. So when we're talking about sea level rise and jurisdictions of various agencies, under the public trust, under state law, the State Lands Commission is the land steward or the land management agency. That's why we issue leases for the occupation of state property. The Coastal Commission's jurisdiction is regulatory and is much more geographically broad, and it's dictated under statute about what the coastal zone is. So the Coastal Commission will have regulatory jurisdiction over development activities, even on private lands. The boundary between public tidelands and private uplands, in a lot of different circumstances, there are exceptions, like where there's urban waterfronts in bays like San Francisco and San Diego, where the boundary isn't moving because it's been fixed
for various reasons. But we do expect on the open coast that this boundary is going to move, and with projections of sea level rise, that that mean high tide line will move landward.
So in that case law, if I could just, Madam Chair, one more quick follow-up question. In that case law, are there cases then that improved property currently belonging to someone that where they either put a porch or, you know, where water might even, you know, at a high or median high tide, could come up to their, you know, splash against their window. Mm-hmm. Are we talking about people's living rooms being suddenly declared the jurisdiction of the public trust?
Not their physical houses, but the land underlying them. That's a real possibility.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Koulakis. Now, I appreciate the report, and I think your questions, Commissioner Koulakis, really speak to kind of the, I think just the urgency, but really appreciate the proactiveness of the two commissions putting these principles and action plans together, and the outreach that will be attendant to it, and the public comment we received back, I think, is all part of the public awareness campaign around what could happen under these circumstances. And, you know, it's oftentimes, you know, it's not real or known until it actually happens. And I hope that this way of being proactive and really understanding our respective jurisdictions and responsibilities, as we've done when we've worked in coordination and collaboration with the Coastal Commission, can really just broaden the public awareness about this. It's very real. It's a very real risk that is likely going to accelerate in the next you know, period of time. I mean, all of the scientific reports just suggest that it's well, it's on its way. So I think with that, Katie, let me see if there are any members of the public who wish to address the commission on this issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our first public commenter is David Yao.
Good afternoon, Mr. Yao.
Thank you, Chair Yi and commissioners. My name is David Yao, and I'm with the Port of San Diego, here to provide the perspective of a state lands trustee on the draft public trust guiding principles and action plan before you today. The Port of San Diego is a partner in protecting California's state tidelands and submerged lands. So when you consider the great variety of coastal dependent uses along our waterfront, you know that's a dynamic responsibility. As described in our AB 691 sea level rise vulnerability assessment and coastal resiliency report, one size fits all approaches don't work. In a bay or harbor environment, multiple strategies are needed. Recently, State Lands and Coastal Commission worked together with other state agencies to adopt 7 sea level rise principles. Now, principle 6 is especially interesting to us. It called out ports and harbor districts for their, and I quote, unique characteristics, significance, constraints, and values of these public trust uses, end quote. Well, that statement's still true. And the unique characteristics and complexity of port operations call for a balanced approach, from nature-based to structural and policy approaches that fit the need. So for the sake of consistency, we'll support recognizing that managing and protecting coastal dependent critical infrastructure is different for ports. So adding that clarity to guiding principle number 8, I think it is, in the plan that we're looking at today, it's gonna help fulfill our mission of protecting and promoting diverse public trust uses. The other thing I'll add is your detailed strategic plan provides a path forward for collaborative leadership on that issue. And that this is wonderful, particularly when it comes to the public trust. So in any principles the commission might consider, we'll urge a flexible and adaptive approach that considers the unique characteristics of ports and harbors and public trust needs as we continue to address coastal resiliency through port tidelands. Thanks again from San Diego.
Thank you, Mr. Yao, very much for your comments, and very much appreciate the relationship we have with our ports, and definitely understand your comments with respect to the flexibility that you are seeking and that has been recognized in some of our other principles. Katie, our next speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our next speaker is Laura Lane.
Good afternoon, Ms. Ling.
Can you hear me, commissioners?
We can hear you. Thank you, Laura.
Excellent. I'm sorry. I was having a little bit of technical difficulties. On behalf of the California Association of Port Authorities, which represents California's 11 public ports, I'd like to express CAPA's appreciation for the State Lands Commission's longstanding partnership in working with our ports on maintaining and growing California's maritime industry. With respect to the development of the Coastal Commission's draft public trust guiding principles and action plan, we want to stress the importance of developing this action plan in partnership with the State Lands and the Coastal Commission in order to develop a plan that takes into consideration the investments in California's ports and the need to protect the state's maritime industry. California's coast and tidelands are a national treasure that involve protecting natural resources, recreational opportunities, as well as its unique industry. Ports provide critical coastal infrastructure that bolster our local economies and are critical to the supply chain. CAPA looks forward to working with you on the development of this action plan to ensure it provides this flexibility needed to address the impacts of sea level rise on all of California's diverse coastal resources. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Laura. Katie, our next speaker, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no other hands raised to provide public comment on this item.
Very well, thank you very much. And again, thank you, Aubrey, for the presentation and for the folks who have provided some comments to us today. Commissioners, let's move on to item 47. And this is a matter to consider delegation of authority for the executive officer to solicit requests for qualifications for consultant services relating to the Hollister Ranch Coastal Access Program. And we do have a presentation, and good afternoon.
And commissioners. My name is Nicole Dabrowski, and I'm the chief of the commission's Division of Environmental Planning and Management. I'm here today to discuss an interagency effort to bring public access to the Gaviota Coast along Hollister Ranch. Next slide, please. Hollister Ranch is a private 14,000-acre gated subdivision in Santa Barbara County, made up of 136 individually held parcels, which includes 8.5 miles of state-owned public shoreline along the Gaviota Coast, including six sandy beaches. The 60-mile-long Gaviota Coast is the least accessible shoreline in California, with less than 2 miles available for general public use. The Hollister Ranch Owners Association owns and controls the guard gate, access road, and much of the land between the road and the mean high tide line, and does not allow land-based unsupervised public access to the beaches. Next slide, please. In 2019, Assembly Bill 1680 was enacted to provide true land-based public access to the tidelands along Hollister Ranch and requires the California Coastal Commission, State Coastal Conservancy, State Lands Commission, and California Department of Parks and Recreation, collectively known as the Interagency Team, to prepare an updated contemporary public access program for the Hollister Ranch beaches. Next slide, please. As part of this effort, commission staff surveyed the coast along Hollister Ranch. While the majority of Hollister Ranch is private property, the coast and beach areas below the mean high tide line belong to the public. This photo shows the results of a mean high tide line survey at Bolito Beach. The red line is the mean high tide line. Below or seaward of this line is state-owned public property, which the public has the legal right to enjoy. The beach areas above or inland of the mean high tide line are privately owned by the Hollister Ranch Owners Association, which the public cannot legally cross or access at this time, blocking public access to the public trust lands below the mean high tide line. Property rights for public access will need to be acquired before the public has the right to cross or use the area of the beach, has the right to cross or use the area of the beach above the mean high tide line. Next slide, please. The Hollister Ranch Coastal Access Program seeks to implement safe, equitable, and inclusive overland public access to the six beaches along the Hollister Ranch coastline and provide experiences that meet the interests of a broad range of Californians, while minimizing impacts to coastal resources, including natural habitats, cultural resources, agricultural operations, and respecting private property rights. The draft Hollister Ranch Coastal Access Program was developed through a robust public engagement and outreach process beginning in December 2019 through November 2021. The interagency team originally anticipated a final program for Coastal Commission approval in March 2022. Along the way, the interagency team determined that preparing a programmatic environmental impact report would be the appropriate process to analyze environmental impacts and receive public input related to the Coastal Commission's action to approve the Hollister Ranch Coastal Access Program. Although the Coastal Commission's certified regulatory program makes their review process equivalent under the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA, preparing a programmatic EIR will ensure full transparency and public input, ensure that the analysis will be useful to other agency approvals in the future, and will be responsive to stakeholder input over the applicability of CEQA. Next slide, please. The California Coastal Commission, as the agency that must approve the Hollister Ranch Coastal Access Program, is considered the lead agency under CEQA. Because of the State Lands Commission's extensive experience in the preparation of CEQA documents, the Coastal Commission requested that the State Lands Commission manage the preparation of a programmatic EIR on their behalf. The State Coastal Conservancy will provide funds through an interagency agreement to the Commission to support staff time and consultants to prepare the programmatic EIR and conduct real estate appraisals of the easements that must be acquired to support the public access program. Even though the State Lands Commission will prepare the programmatic EIR, the Coastal Commission still has the responsibility to independently analyze and certify the document. Next slide, please. Preparation of a programmatic EIR on behalf of the Coastal Commission and conducting real estate assessments to support future easement acquisitions are consistent with public trust doctrine and the state's best interests. One of the key principles of the common law public trust doctrine is the people's right to access public tidelands and submerged lands along the California coast. The environmental analysis and real estate appraisals of the required real property interests to implement the Hollister Ranch Coastal Access Program is a necessary step in ensuring the public's right to access the state-owned beaches along the shoreline of Hollister Ranch. If approved by the Coastal Commission, the Hollister Ranch Coastal Access Program will result in nearly 8.5 miles of additional coastal beach area for public access and recreation use and enjoyment, which is currently inaccessible to the general public. Next slide, please. Staff recommends that the Commission take two actions. First, authorize the executive officer or her designee to solicit by appropriate procurement methods for qualified consultant services, negotiate fair and reasonable prices, award and execute agreements, and take any other steps reasonably necessary to undertake public outreach, and prepare the necessary environmental documentation and real estate appraisals that may be needed to facilitate the Hollister Ranch Coastal Access Program, pursuant to the requirements of the Public Contract Code and current state policies and procedures. And second, authorize a delegation of authority to the executive officer or her designee to negotiate and execute an interagency agreement between the State Coastal Conservancy and the California State Lands Commission to allow transfer of funds from the Coastal Conservancy to the Commission in furtherance of the aforementioned environmental documentation and real estate appraisals to facilitate the Hollister Ranch Coastal Access Program. Next slide, please. And that concludes my presentation.
Great. Thank you very much, Nicole. Any questions or comments, commissioners? Yes, Commissioner Mill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that presentation. I think this is another example of the
of the phenomenal ways in which we collaborate and coordinate with our colleagues at Coastal Conservancy and the Coastal Commission and State Lands. It really is, I think, serves as a good example of how well the state can work together. I'm interested in public comment, but I think that we have done, it's extraordinary just in 3 years to see how much work we've done and how we really are meeting all the goals while hearing from the community. And also, I think just what the state does so well in terms of providing access to all of these phenomenal beaches we have. So a huge kudos to you on the work and all of the ways in which you take public comment. It really is just such a feat, and I'm really proud to be a part of it. So great job on this.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Miller. Okay. Very well. Thank you. Katie, let me turn to you to see if there are any members of the public who wish to address us on this item.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our first public commenter is Mandy Sackett.
Good afternoon.
Hi. Hi, hello, Chair Yee, commissioners and staff. Mandy Sackett with Surfrider Foundation. Thank you so much for your commitment to restoring coastal access at Hollister Ranch. We support these efforts to finalize and implement the draft access plan. It's an understatement to say that public access is really long overdue for the 8.5 miles of inaccessible coastline in Santa Barbara County. The plan is an important first step, and it sounds like CEQA is a next step that will help advance the goals of the plan. And so Surfrider is supportive of the staff recommendation today. As the staff report points out, Californians have a right to access the beach at Hollister under the public trust doctrine. We also believe that CEQA may be an important step to identify and address potential concerns that accessways or trails might have on impacts to sensitive habitats, ensuring that any development does not exacerbate beach erosion or end up relying on shoreline armoring, and to make sure those are otherwise properly mitigated. So thank you so much for your efforts to restore the right of Californians. Maximal coastal access is a fundamental right for all Californians and worth protecting here at Hollister and elsewhere on the coast. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Mandy. Katie, our next speaker, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our next speaker is Susan Jordan.
Good afternoon, Susan.
Hi. Hi. Sorry, I had a little stall there. Susan Jordan, the director of the California Coastal Protection Network. I thought it was important to come today and just to say thank you for your longstanding work on providing public access at Hollister Ranch. It's been a very difficult fight. I sat on the working group that met for, 2 years during the course of the pandemic to come up with a plan. Many of us were somewhat disappointed that the decision was made to pursue a CEQA document at this point, knowing that the commission itself is CEQA equivalent. But we also understood the realities, and we're dealing with a very litigious entity. And we felt then that this was a prudent move. But I do really need to compliment the state lands for the first stepping into the fray, mapping the mean high tide line, being steadfast about the public's right to pursue public access here. And I should point out that most people may not realize this, but Hollister Ranch is the only subdivision or development that has its own special section in the Coastal Act, two sections dated 1979 and 1982, where it was made clear that they were receiving the ability to move forward with permits for developing houses and stables and all kinds of other structures there in exchange for the provision of subdivision-wide public access in a timely manner. And that was over 40 years ago. So I always just like to remind people of how long it's been. And again, to say thank you, and I agree with Ms. Miller that the work has been extraordinary. The leadership from the commission, from the chair, and the other commissioners has been extraordinary, and congratulations on the great work. It's not going to be easy, but I know you can get through it. Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Katie, our next speaker, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no other hands raised to provide public comment on this item.
Thank you, Katie. Let me just add my thanks. This has been a journey, but I think we're at that point of where we're going slow to go fast, ultimately. And I feel very optimistic that our march towards public access will really be a successful one. And certainly, as Commissioner Miller mentioned, you know, really recognizing the contribution of this commission, especially with respect to our ability to coordinate, collaborate, but most importantly, the engagement process. This is an action item, commissioners. We have two parts of the staff recommendation as Nicole presented to us. May I have a motion, please?
Move approval.
I have a motion by Commissioner Miller.
Seconded
by Commissioner Kunalakis. If there is no objection to a unanimous vote, such will be the order. Thank you very much. Ms. Lucchese, what's our next order of business?
Our next order of business is our second public comment period.
Ah, okay. Great. Thank you. If anyone wishes to address the commission on any matter that is not on today's agenda, please raise your hand. I will have Katie call on the first person who would like to make a public comment. This will then be our second public comment period. Let me turn to you, Katie. I believe Ms. Vosburgh was looking to this portion of the agenda if she's back on in the queue.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So our first public commenter is Jeanette Vosburgh.
Okay. Ms. Vosburgh?
Ms. Vosburgh, you should be able to unmute yourself to speak.
Ms. Vosburgh, can you hear us? Katie, anyone else in the queue? We can return to Ms. Vosburgh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no other hands raised for public comment.
I am here. There she is. And I'm ready to speak if you're ready for me.
We are ready for you, Ms. Vosburgh.
Okay.
Please.
I'm going to start over on this journey because, you know, I got interrupted and probably no one will remember. I'm Jeanette Vosburgh, Outreach Coordinator for Grassroots Coalition, speaking in the absence of Patricia, our president, who is unable to attend due to an emergency. It's not her, but it's someone she cares deeply about. The Playa Vista Biona Wetlands Conservancy and Bayah SLC's allowance for their continued control have been part of unpermitted and environmentally destructive road building in the riparian corridor. CDFW cited stream bed violation LADBS citations, citations by vector control for failure to do mosquito abatement program. Grassroots Coalition, and this is another issue, still awaits response to our concerns regarding the control of Biona issues by the Playa Vista Development's private business known as the Biona Wetlands Conservancy, to which SLC acknowledges that it's not a board member. SLC continues to state that CDFW, CD11, and Friends of Biona are Biona Wetlands Conservancy board members without anything but hearsay and Playa Vista's Biona Conservancy bylaws, which do not comport with IRS records per its board members. See Biona Conservancy IRS records sent to SLC. IRS records provide to SLC only reference Playa Vista entities as board members. Other concerns are, one, unpermitted and environmentally destructive diversion and drainage of freshwater resources via unpermitted drainage wells in Biona Wetlands Ecological Reserve, as cited as a coastal violation by the California Coastal Commission and subsequently stopped by the Coastal Commission. In other words, the drains were capped. Two, failure to protect and ensure that freshwater resources of Biona that were being pumped, diverted, and drained away from Biona Wetlands by Playa Vista and the Biona Wetlands Conservancy, whether permitted or unpermitted, were and are protected for use by Biona Wetlands and Biona Wetlands Ecological Reserve. SLC has not stopped or attempted to end the wasting and diversion of this fresh water away from Biona. Three, failure to explore, reabandon, and stop the petroliferous chemicals abandoned wells known as University Syndicate. I have more to say. Do I have any more time? Hello?
Yes, we're going to give you an additional 2 minutes.
Okay, thank you very much. For failure to protect, and by the way, I just like to digress for a minute. I really appreciate what you're doing with the public trust. I think, you know, and I also think that the last meeting of the California State Lands Commission was a good meeting. And I think people, you know, even though life isn't perfect, you've been doing a relatively good job, and we do appreciate that. So four, failure to protect the freshwater resources of Biona Wetlands for Biona Wetlands Ecological Reserve, as the Biona Wetlands Conservancy has continued to divert the freshwater marsh water to the ocean via the main drain of the freshwater marsh system to Biona Channel to the ocean, and thereby harming the hydrology of Biona. And there is a CDFW letter from Betty Courtney to Playa Vista, AKA the Biona Wetlands Conservancy. Five, failure to correct the main drain of the freshwater marsh system to stop the Biona Channel toxic waters from backflowing up and out the unpermitted drains and into the Biona Wetlands Ecological Reserve. No permit has ever existed that allowed for backflow of Biona Channel water via the main drain to reach the sensitive wetlands. And there's a letter about it by Somas Crehan to Playa Vista and Bay Foundation and CDFW pertaining to the backflow. So there's an admission there that it's happening. Six is Grassroots Coalition requests independent oversight of the freshwater marsh system as discussed in 2005. California Fish and Game Commission hearings. There is time to correct the mistakes of the past and stop compounding the harm to Biona Wetlands. I mean, both Patricia and I have for, well, 30 years for her and 20 years for me, have really devoted ourselves to having a good possible, you know, outcome on the restoration of Biona. And everything that I've read and everything that she's read counter indicates that this should be called a Title 632 as opposed to a 630. It just doesn't make sense. And so we really need your help. And I it's unfortunate that Patricia can't be here to, you know, to really express the needs in a better way. But, you know, I'm trying best as I can to say to all of you, please help us. We, especially with sea level rise, to do a really ambitious dig out of probably 70% of the land at Biona to, you know, 20 to 30 feet deep and invite seawater into the three three different aquifers just absolutely makes no sense to us. We should be raising the walls of the channel. And the last thing is that, you know, somewhat the whole county has been ignored in all of this. That Biona Creek flood control channel belongs to the county. And the way that things are being written implies that it doesn't belong to the county, that it belongs to Biona Wetlands. And that is absolutely not true. And there's an intentional elimination of the county in all of these discussions. And that's just patently not right. So I'm asking that people really pay attention to what's going on here. We've done a laborious job of looking at all these issues. I've personally put together a brochure that I think all of you have, that you've been sent that brochure by Patricia, both electronically and I believe physically, because we printed it. And I ask that you not treat us as outsiders, but treat us as somebody that really, grassroots coalition, really is willing, able, and begging to be able to participate with you in solving these problems at Biona. We are not trying in any way to stop the good things that need to happen. And we've been working very closely with restoration ecologist Margot Griswold, who also, I mean, the three of us are like...
Ms. Bosworth, your time has expired.
I know. Thank you so much for hearing me.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Katie, our next speaker. Any other speakers in the queue?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this time, we have no other hands raised to provide public comment.
All right. Thank you very much, Katie. That concludes our second public comment period. And let me just see if any of the commissioners have any questions or comments at this point. Yeah. Okay. Ms. Lucchese, what is our next order of business?
Our next order of business is typically a closed session. However, we do not have any items to discuss in closed sessions today. So through the chair, I recommend we adjourn the meeting.
All right. Very well. Thank you very much, commissioners. That concludes the open meeting, and we are hereby adjourned. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.